Welcome to the London Welsh Rugby Club podcast.
This is episode 64. What a weekend of rugby last weekend was. Our first 15 had a tremendous back-to-the-wall battle with Hammersmith and Fulham and came away with a bonus point win, which they really had to earn. The Druids experienced their first loss of the season but managed to get a losing bonus point. But I think the most exciting match of the weekend was the women's game versus Chesham. You have to remember, Chesham were the opponents for St David's Day lunch back in March 2020, and they comfortably beat our women on that day. But on this Sunday, our women were 15-0 down at some point during the match, but came back to snatch a last gaps winner at the end and run away 26-25 winners. They certainly enjoyed the evening in the bar OTP afterwards. A fab weekend for our senior sides. Our guest this week is a popular character amongst his teammates and supporters. He arrived at the beginning of Project Reset and has been with us ever since. He has a few availability issues with work, which has curtailed his involvement so far this season, but he's itching to get back. We hear about his rugby journey and the love of his life. Our guest is none other than the butcher of Old Deer Park, Sam Mahoney. Enjoy. Welcome to the pod, prop superstar, current squad member, and the butcher of Old Deer Park, Sam Mahoney. How are you, Sam?
I'm great. Are you going to sub the applause in?
There'll be loads of cheers. As when you walk on the pitch, do you know what I mean, at Old Deer Park, those cheers from the thousands who come and watch you and the squad members play.
That is where I do my walking.
I've seen you trot on, don't worry. But are you all right, Sam? Have you been lazy with one thing or another? You've not been at the club as much as probably we would like to see you. We probably were getting in the way, but you know, you all right in yourself?
Doing great, yeah. Really enjoying myself. Would love to play a bit more, but I think you have to train to play. I think that's one of the keys. And you have to be fit. So I've got to work on those two things, but... yeah, doing well, enjoying myself.
Plus your availability, but your nickname, I don't know who penned it, I'm not sure, but the butcher ODP, you are or were a butcher. So when you started ODP, you're a butcher, but how did you get into butchery and the meat industry, shall we say? Is that something you studied at university, or is that something you did after university and just found a way in there, really?
No, I did history at university. Right. I did history, and then when we all got to the end of third year, our rugby club at the time put me and Tom in touch with a commodity brokerage, a power brokerage, that they were saying, yeah, we can get you a job here, we can get you a job in a couple of different things. As a test, and I hated it. I was breaking in my friend's shoes and sleeping on his floor. But that, I hated it as well as all of that. And I thought, what do I really like in the world? I like food. I like the little tiny bit of butchery I did one morning a week when I was like 15, 16. I thought, let's do that. So to their horror, I turned my nose up at the city jobs and went to ask Ginger Pig if I could be an unpaid apprentice. And they were so shocked that I said I didn't need money, that they decided to pay me anyway, which was a relief, really, with the rent.
What is Ginger Pig for our listeners? I don't understand what that is. Is that a butcher chain, or is it a way of training? I don't understand it.
It's a chain of shops. So they've got, I think they've got 11 shops around London now, right through central, out to east, and down south, kind of Clapham. Yeah, I worked in Barnes, Shepherd's Bush, and a little tiny bit in Marylebone. But yeah, I went from there and soon realised that working Saturdays meant you couldn't play Saturdays. So switched to a shop in Ealing where I did have Saturdays off, and worked there for 3 or 4 years butchering, became the manager of that shop, had a great time there, and then realised butchering 65, 70 hours a week and playing rugby, training twice a week, does effectively kill you. So I remember I tried to hang a piece of beef up and just put my back out and laid on the floor of the shop for like maybe 45 minutes, unable to move. So things like that happened. I couldn't really walk properly. You know, those little things. So I decided I'd try and get into something that was meaty but not as physical. Then I managed to get into wholesale for a farm in Yorkshire, selling it to all restaurants around town, which is where I kind of gained this restaurant knowledge, I suppose, and recommendations.
And isn't that where you were sort of named the meat executive, isn't it, then? Rather than the butcher.
That was when I made the switch to meat executive, yeah. yeah. Butcher, manager, meat executive. And then about an hour, a year and a half into that, a little thing called pandemic happened. And when you look after restaurants in London for commission, the last thing you want is all of them shutting overnight. Yeah. And that is what happened. And so I decided probably not best to go on furlough. So I went straight into a shop, worked in Ellsfield and Do Garden Daughters for that 3 months, which was probably the hardest 3 months work I've ever had. Like, it was just unbelievable. Like, we'd do all the prep we could do for the weekend on a Wednesday. It was all sold by Thursday lunch. Work all day Thursday to try and fill the fridge back up. All gone by Friday morning. Work all day Friday just trying to fulfill orders, and then get in at like 4 a.m. on a Saturday just to try and get something in the window. I was literally rolling meat with people opposite me just buying each thing I finished doing. Like, it was crazy.
That's in the middle of the pandemic, this. People, your shop was open, or were you doing deliveries, or what was it?
It was just retail shops. So no deliveries, just a 50-meter long queue out the door from 7 a.m. till 7 p.m., 7 days a week for 3 months. And I got COVID, like, bad in that. So, like four days into working there, I got COVID, which put me on my back for 3 weeks. But it was great. You know, it was great working in a new shop, meeting new people, and a few London Welsh players come in. I remember Tiddler caught me at the block once. Baldwin didn't come in because they're too expensive. He's tight. He used to come in when I went to Hook and Cleaver because I could get him a discount.
Yeah.
But he didn't go anywhere else.
You have to refrain from doing nicknames because some people want to know who they're. So Tiddler would be?
Rhys Tudor Davies.
Right, okay.
A fan favourite.
Okay.
Ref Bank of England.
Yes, of course. Yes.
18. Yeah, and then from there, I got a job at Dales, which was a meat buyer. So meat butcher, meat executive, meat buyer, which was pretty cool. Did that for a year and a half. And now I'm a buying and supply chain manager for Field & Flower, which is kind of dreamy. I never really thought I'd have a job like this. But it's been a, quote, meteoric.
Very rise. Good. Very good. I'm sure you've used that before. So you're now based in Somerset, yeah? Is that right? Or Suffolk?
Somerset. So I'm down near Glastonbury 3 days a week and work from home 2 days a week.
Right, okay.
But yeah, still pay London rent, but work in the middle of nowhere 3 days a week. But it's cool. Yeah.
And I suppose working away from London and London Welsh, and that's affected your availability for the club for training and then possibly games because of that. Yeah, is that right?
Pretty much. It's obviously, yeah, I'm away. I get back on late Wednesday, so I'm fully away. And then it's a hard sell that first Thursday back, going off to training after not seeing Roe for 4 days. You know, and I can't commit every week. But I'm working on it. I think I'm going to be down here 3 days a week for, you know, the first 6-7 months, and then we're going to sort of look at how often I have to be here. So hopefully I can start moving things around and get a bit more availability and get back training and get back playing.
But you have played for us this year. You've had a turnout for the Druids. I mean, obviously, you've seen the squad change so much across the last, you know, 3 or 4 years being at the club, and got quite a few, you know, front rowers. But we've been missing a few the last few weeks. But, you know, competition is hot for places. But you were playing, you know, in the Druids a couple of weeks ago. You must have enjoyed, you know, putting the shirt back on.
Yeah, it was great. I managed to squeeze the shirt back on. Thought it was a 13 on the back. It was actually 3. I'm not sure. Pete Lowe stitched me up with the sizing thing. But yeah, I managed to get a little try. It was a bit of a whitewash though. But no, it was fantastic to just to play in a Druids team with that caliber of players was just ridiculous. I think the opposition said after the game they've never played a twos like it, you know. And it just goes to show how strong the squad is, like you said. So it's no, pleasure to get back out, especially on the ones which ODP. You know, I didn't think I'd get on it this year. So no, good laugh.
Look, we understand it's amateur sport, you know, and you know work is very important, as is, you know, family. And you mentioned your girlfriend Rosanna. She's obviously you're engaged, and your best friend Tom's recently got engaged. So, and you're gonna beat him to get married, or will you get married before you? Do you think?
He's probably getting married. He's booked a venue.
Has he?
He's
just keen as mustard. Yeah,
he is. Yeah, he's. I think he's decided he might have a keeper, so he's locking her into Britain contracts before she changes her mind. But I think he's getting married in Holland. Did he tell you that?
He's not given me that exclusive. We just have now, so thank you for that. So
that is a London Welsh Pod exclusive. Tom Baldwin's getting married in Holland. Yeah,
but no plans for you yet. No, just happily engaged, and then obviously, you know, just got to work on your London Welsh Thursday night trainings first, yeah, before you sort of try and get it down the aisle.
That's step one. Yeah, I think Rose got like maybe a 100-person Irish family. So if I save like a grand a month for 6-7 years, I should be able to afford the wedding. That's step two. Yeah.
Fair enough. Look, that's great. Look, you know, I'm glad you're found your feet, shall we say, with Field and Flower. Maybe we can work on a commercial offering for London Welsh at some point when you've got your feet under the table a bit. But it's a great brand, and you know, it's great you've found a job that you're really passionate about. So, which is brilliant. Mm. But look, let's this is a rugby podcast and not a meat one. So, but let's take it back to the beginning and how you found rugby and how you got into it. Was this the first sport you got into, or were there others in your sort of early childhood that you had a go at until you found like rugby?
I think growing up in Essex, you have to try football.
Yeah.
But we very quickly realised that I had no control over what my arms and legs did, and certainly couldn't kick a ball. I still can't. So I think I only have one session of that. Age about 7, I started doing judo, which was more suited to me because once you get hold of them, you just got to chuck them around.
Yeah.
Which is kind of what I do at rugby. But really enjoyed that. And then I got into rugby when I was 10 for Colchester under 10s. And it was great. It was my, well, I, and the first year I did it, we had uncontested scrums. It was very open. And I think we only had 8 players on the team, which didn't suit me, but they said, just wait. We think your unique body type could suit rugby next year. And I stuck around, and the rest is history, I think.
So you were always like a powerful looking chap then, even at a young age, yeah?
I have very thick knees. Yeah. You can tell a lot about a man by his knees. I have very, very thick knees. So they looked at those and went, yeah, we'll keep it. The only positional change I've ever had was I played loose head for a season. I've always been a prop. No, wait. End of first year of uni, they tried to play number 8, but it was just a waste of time.
So you've propped obviously all your life, basically. Yeah. So so you've contested scrums from under 11s, and you found your calling sort of thing. So how was, you know, Colchester RFC? Is that, you know, did you play there all the way to your 18?
Yeah. Colchester Rugby Club, Colchester Grammar School, played Saturdays and Sundays, age 11 through to age 17. Great time. Really good time.
That's a lot of rugby when you're 16, 17, 18 to be playing school Saturday and club Sunday. You know, we find that challenging, you know, around here. But you know, the schools were okay with you doing that, yeah? Especially if you're a prop as well. It's quite not as like it's a easy position to play and to back it up again the next day.
I actually did more than that. I think there were four weekends where I did school Saturday morning, Clacton Men's Rugby Saturday afternoon, then Colchester Colts on Sunday. Okay. And once I played Eastern Counties Wednesday, school Saturday morning, club Saturday afternoon, and then half a game for Colts Sunday. So 3.5 games in a week.
You took it easy then. That's probably, you know, not legal.
That's why I burnt out so early, right?
Probably not the right thing for your long-term rugby future, but if you're enjoying yourself and in demand, I imagine, as a prop, then that's amazing. But, you know, when you were at Colchester for 6-7 years, what made that like a good environment for a young teenager, Sam Mahoney, growing up? You know, were there good lads there, some good tours, you know, nice memories?
Yeah, we had a great time. So me and one of my best friends from home, Jack, used to go up together. Colchester's 25 minutes down the road. We're both from Clacton. So we'd go up together. He was my second row behind me. A lot of the boys in that team are still like some of my best friends that I see, you know, once, twice a month. But I think what was so good is a lot of my school played for the club. A lot of the club played for the school. So we were kind of two versions of the same team. And then the club as well, we were like shit hot, which was good. Sorry for swearing.
That's all right.
I think we were undefeated for 3 years, maybe four. And it got to a point where I think by the time we got to under 16s, no one wanted to play us. So we started playing under 17s teams or going far away to play. So we played Blackheath. We played London Scottish, propped against Carl Sinclair when he was at Scottish. Like, we were going all over the place for games. And it was great.
Well, I'm not surprised. If you had the consistency between school and club. But you mentioned you played for Clacton later, and we'll come on to that. But you travelled from Clacton to Colchester, but there was a cult section of Clacton, probably, wasn't there?
Only just. So Clacton didn't have a youth section when I started playing, which is why I went up the road. But
okay.
just as I got into Colts, Clacton started their own Colts. So I knew all the boys, and obviously then I started playing with them for men's. So yeah, it was good fun. I'm not sure if I ever actually played against Clacton Colts, but I wish I had.
But that explains why you had to. And also you wanted to play with probably your schoolmates at Colchester. So when you were at Colchester, you mentioned you had some like Eastern Counties representative rugby. Was that what age was that? Was that like under 14 to under 18 sort of thing?
14s to 20s. No, I think it was Suffolk at 14s, and then Eastern Counties came in when we got to under 16s. Because Suffolk, Norfolk, Cambridgeshire aren't big enough to play proper counties, apparently.
Right, okay.
So we joined together to make Eastern Counties and play against, you know, South Yorks, Kent, Essex, teams like that. But yeah, that was under, I think it's 16s, 18s, 20s I played counties. But I never actually got through a trial. I always went to the trials and I was even less coordinated than I am now. So I just drive scrums all over the place and then drop every ball that came my way. But what it seemed to happen is they'd play one game and realise they didn't have any scrummaging props and so call me up for the other six of the season or something like that. So didn't get through the trial, still got all the stash, still played most of the games. So not a bad result, really.
And did you ever travel abroad with those sort of games, or were the tours always with the clubs, really? So would you tour like into Europe with Colchester, or was that, would it have been toured around the UK?
We did sort of the classic minis tours. Yeah. Bognor Regis.
The Butlin camps, that sort of thing, yeah?
Yeah, that kind of thing. We went to Paris. We did a Spain tour. We had a Paris tour, and every team we played was Welsh. the final was against Pembrokeshire, and the guest of honour at the tournament was Dwayne Peel. It was the least French Parisian tour I've ever been to. Yeah, Pembrokeshire could lift in the lineup, and we couldn't because the Wales playing with different rules. So that wasn't very fair, but it was a good ding dong anyway.
But the tours for a young lad growing up, they really sort of I think help you sort of find those friendships, don't they, really? Because you go away and you have a kindred spirit, you know, you play a game, you have, you know, fun outside rugby. It gives you, it sort of prepares you well for life in rugby, really, doesn't it, in life in general.
And yeah, seeing how drunk adult men can get while still being in charge of children, things like that.
Yeah,
that's pretty handy.
That doesn't happen on London Welsh minis and youth tours, I can assure you.
Does it not?
No, it's far more responsible. But you also...
No phone parties. No, not
on the tours I've been on. Look, you've also, you talk about all this representative, like rugby for Suffolk and Eastern Counties. You must have had a sniff at like any sort of Premiership academies at all, because say you're a scrummaging prop in demand at a county level. You must have had a look at, been looked at by some of the Premiership clubs. Would that be a Saracens region or a Saints region?
We were Saints. Right. So what Saints did was they, I think it, we were in our mid-teens just as these academies started putting actual teams together.
Yeah.
So for a long time, academies were just moulding players and doing training sessions and just trying to blend them into the ones or farm them out to other clubs. When we got to 15, 16, there was, you know, these tourneys starting and Saints had to put a team together. So they picked up the best looking front five in their catchment, which was the Suffolk front five, which was basically the Colchester front five.
Yeah.
So me, my friend George, my friend Jake, Jack, Jamie, like we all went to Saints together. And then Deo did as well, Alex Day, who then actually played for Saints, then went to Cornish Pirates, then he went to Saracens, now he's at Bedford Blues, but he's a real deal rugby player. But yeah, like a bunch of us did. It was good. It was a long way. And it was very high intensity sessions, and I was sort of just chubby tight head waiting for the scrums. But no, it was good. I eventually left after a training testing day at Franklin's Gardens, where we had to do a bunch of power tests in the gym, and the Saints team were training in the gym, and we walked in and Carlos Spencer was suspending himself over two bars, just looking around the room, just holding himself up with his arms. And there was the Lamont brothers were in there, and Bruce Ray Hana. I think it was the first year after they were in the championship. And I couldn't do a pull-up, and Carlos laughed at me. I hope it hasn't scarred me too much, but it was, I remember it vividly. And then I stopped going. But again, I got all this stash, so I'm the real winner, right?
Yeah, definitely. If you've got the other same stash still. But even there for two or three years, so it's a great learning opportunity. You know, they obviously, those sort of academies, they have players coming in and out all the time. It's such a hard thing. You said you had a quality front five from your club that go to Suffolk and enter there, but yeah, none of those front five stayed with them post 18, did they?
Mikey Hayward.
I've heard of him.
He might have just got his 200th cap for them. Yeah. He came over as well.
Was he in your front five though? You didn't mention him initially, did you?
No, he was 1 year older than us, but he was Colchester, Suffolk, Eastern County, same deal as us. And Clacton as well. So if you're listening, Mikey, hey. Yeah, slightly different trajectories from the same beginnings.
Yeah, but he's never played at ODP, though, has he? I've actually seen Northampton play there but when they were in the championship, when they had Carlos Spencer, Chris Ashton was playing, Dylan Hartley, all that sort of thing.
Really?
Yeah, and they had about 3,000 there. And there actually was 3,000, not me making it up. There was actually 3,000 there. It was a...
You know, you amend it down, don't you?
I tend to, yes.
You're not allowed to tell people you've got 6,500, so you got to...
No, we get
play
the tax,
with the numbers.
You know, if we charge, then a tax man would be after us. But
luckily
we don't charge. So that's quite a rugby-filled... teenage years for you, really, isn't it? You think about, was that your passion there, really? You know, obviously you wanted to do well in education because you went to university, but that was your main sort of way of letting off steam as a teenage boy, really, was playing rugby. Yeah,
I was a bit of a tearaway at school, really. Luckily I was a tearaway at a good school, so I still went to university, but I didn't get on with a lot of my teachers. The only ones I got on with were the rugby coaches and the rugby players who kind of understood wild children. But yeah, rugby was it really. Yeah. I'd train. I think I was swimming as well, but I'd do something like swimming Monday, rugby Tuesday, play Wednesday, rugby Thursday, Friday off, rugby Saturday, rugby Sunday. So yeah, pretty heavy on the rugby.
And we won't come into the socialising bit yet, because you're still obviously a minor, you know, 16, 17. But you spoke earlier a bit about going to senior rugby, and you played for Clacton RFC when you were sort of 17, 18.
Yeah, shout out to Clacton.
It's quite challenging for a front row forward, certainly at that sort of age, to be propping against, you know, you could be propping against people who are twice your age, be propping for 20 years. How did you find that transition from Colts rugby into senior men's rugby?
I loved it. It was brutal. I actually got selected in the second row because I was 17. Obviously, you can't play front row till you're 18.
Correct.
And the prop in front of me was getting chewed up. And I said, let's just swap. And he was like, are you sure? And the coach going bananas on the cut and touchline. And I said, yeah, let's see what happens. And I did men's tight end scrummaging when I was illegally 17 for about half a game, so I got bollocks in the clubhouse for it. But
yeah,
I loved it. I turned 18 in November, and from then I was proffing right through. Essex won a pretty brutal league. You find, you know, normally some of the lower leagues, you got lightweight flankers and props, you got people putting a shift in who don't really want to play prop but want to play rugby. We didn't have any of those in Essex One. All we had was horrible people that just want to break your bones and snap your fingers and rip your ears off and crush you. But yeah, I loved it. It was brilliant. We played Old Cooperians one game, and Roe was on the touchline, and we were obliterating them, we were just flattening them. Every scrum, and I was against maybe a 45, 50-year-old prop who decided after two or three that the only way this was going to stop was if he could just knock me out. So as we engaged, he'd take his bind off and just start swinging for me in the scrum when the ref was on the other side. And Roe would be going absolutely mental on touchline, trying to run on the pitch, being held back, screaming at the ref. But best thing was, he didn't knock me out. What he did do was obliterate my nose. And so every time they tried to take a quick tap, I just shoot blood all over myself out of my nose, and the game would have to stop. And no, it was great. Should really just stop going on, but there's maybe five or six games in. We played against the team. It might have been Campion. And after the game, their prop, who I was against, was talking to my dad in the clubhouse, didn't know it was my dad. And he said, when I'm his age, I want a prop as well as him. And dad was like, if you're talking about the tight end, he's 18 years old. And the guy was like, oh my God, I'm 24. It's like, but no, I'd say that was one of my funnest years of rugby.
But you know,
Clacton was just so much fun. It's just so good.
But that, you know, that's like great that you've enjoyed that environment, because it's confrontational, it's physical, it's like strenuous. But you know, playing the sport is one side that an 18-year-old young man has to get used to. But also you need to get used to the social side, you know, and you know, finding, you know, your levels, you know, and who you are socially within sort of that environment. How was that for the young Sam Mahoney?
I think I was pretty. It's odd. At school, I was pretty loud and a whole load of other bad words, probably obnoxious, noisy. But then I went to Clacton. Obviously, you're dealing with, you know, everyone's 30, 35. They've been playing for a long time. They're all, you know, digging holes around the M25 or laying train tracks or tree sturgeons. They're all like proper blokes. And it makes you realise how you're not. So I was quite shy probably when I first come in. Just because they're just sort of massive characters. But it's a good place to grow up quite quickly, because I did it when I was in a gap year as well. So I had a year out between school and uni. So all my friends had gone to uni. So these guys became like my friends for a year. So I was, kicking around with 18-year-olds and then 35-year-olds, and then went to uni after that. So it was a good kind of fast track, I think, into adulthood.
So why did you have a year out then? Did you a year out just to like, to bum around for a year before you got to university, to have like a rest, or was there a special reason for the gap year?
You've been talking to Stacey.
I can't possibly comment on my sources here.
I had a year out because I'd met Ro at school. I was in upper six, she was in lower six, and we've been going out for maybe 6 months. Yeah. And I canned university in for a year to wait for her to finish school. And I worked in a school while I was doing it as a teacher assistant, and obviously played rugby. But then, yeah, we went to Royal Holloway together after that, which was great.
That's some commitment for a 6-month-old relationship to stay back for a year to then to university with your then girlfriend, but she's now your fiance. So it's worked out. It's currently out.
Yeah, we've even got a cat together. We're in. Oh. This is it. Yeah. I think I knew what I was getting into. So I thought, this would be worth sticking around for.
And you were spot on. Look, when you were at Clapton, though, you had the pleasure of playing with Big Shane, a tight head.
Yeah.
What was so great about Big Shane?
He's unstoppable. He might be 22 stone, 23 stone, but the fastest man I've ever seen over 20 yards. And so I think he's still playing now, pushing 40 years old. I think maybe in his 20s, he might have got top try scorer 8 out of 10 years. Wow. We'd just do a back peel off a line out. He'd be the front lifter, run around the back, hit his pace as he comes off the back of the line out, and just swat the fly half, or just carry him over the line with it and just dot it down under the post over and over again. Pick and go. Just run through three people. It was ridiculous. And then, that's the only year I've ever played loose head, because Shane was a tight head and he categorically told me that I wasn't going to play tight. So I got to know loose head for a bit, which is great. But Dan was hooking as well. Dan was brilliant. It was a very good, very good year with a very good front row. And we ran over everyone in Essex One for a year.
And so would Shane still be playing for Clacton then? Or would he be playing for someone else if he's still playing?
Clacton.
Wow, so 20 years properly for Clacton. That's amazing.
Yeah, maybe more than that. You have to ask him. I think he might have been at Colchester until he was about 20. But yeah, he's been at Clacton since for as long as I've known rugby.
And you said you had that one season, then you went off to uni. But did you have that in that season? Did you go away at all with the club, or was it? Because obviously, with my lads, kind of to sort of ages now, they're 16 and 17. You're thinking like, what's their life going to be like going to senior rugby? Those older lads putting their arms around them, buying them beers, and just making sure that they don't make too much of a dick of themselves. Was there someone like that for you?
Yeah, all of them. That was the thing. I was a very paternal group. You'd go out with no money and you'd open your wallet at the bar to get a fiver out, someone put 40 quid in it for you, or you wouldn't end up buying drinks all night, or you'd get invited out for breakfast before a big away game to kind of bring you in. I definitely had 15 arms around really when I was playing for Clacton. And I'd like to think I've carried that through all the places I've played rugby, like at uni and everywhere else. There's a big pay it forward community, because 18-year-olds have never got any money. Even if they earn money, they haven't got money. So you know, and you know, you were looked after when you were 18, you look after them, and when they turn late 20s, they'll look after the next lot. And I think I'm still paying it forward from that year, to be honest, from the amount of help I got.
Yeah. Oh, lovely. I love that. I love that sort of rugby sort of spirit and, you know, sort of the community side of it all. It's how people look after each other. But you look, you had that season at Clacton, and then you finally went to Royal Holloway with your fiance. And so did you then start playing rugby there then, yeah, for the university?
Yeah, straight into Royal Holloway Men's Rugby Club. Great 3 years. Tom Baldwin, very aggressive to start with to everyone, but it mellowed out.
Is this the Welsh chip on the shoulder sort of thing, you think? Is that what it was?
Very much so. I've heard the word crochets about 12 times in that first training session. Didn't even know what it was. Yeah. No, it was good. We had our first coach, Cliff, was a absolute weapon. And it turned out he'd give it the big one that he was this and that, and we'd done well to hire him. But then after a year, he went to prison for fraud. And turns out he never played rugby in his life. He's reading it all out of books and YouTube videos before coming to sessions. So, funny start. But really good first year. Let me think. Yeah, and then second year, me and Tom became social secretaries, which is quite an eventful year. I think we did 22 socials, 3 black tie do's, boat party, awards dinner, colours ball, like,
wow.
It was a hell of a calendar. It was pretty much 2 events a week for a year to organise. But we had a very good time. And then,
what was the standard of rugby like, though? Was that a good standard? Did you know, from after playing Essex One, did you feel that was a step up, or was it a step down from that for yourself, do you think?
It was a much faster step sideways. It was different
rugby.
Similar level, but my God, the speed of it. We had a 3G pitch, which I did score the first 3 tries on, let me say. First game of the season, I got a hat-trick in 20 minutes.
Wow.
And then didn't score again for maybe 15 games. But yeah, little arrogant shout out there. No one believes me when I say that, I swear. No one even remembers. I swear it's true. But it's very fast. Very fast, and obviously, you know, uni rugby, you're all in the gym and stuff. First year, I was in quite good shape. Tom always tells people I actually had traps in first year. By second year, the booze had kicked in, and I was very much more of a leisure rugby playing shape. And that I think I've carried that forward nicely.
I think those 22 social events you'd organised probably hit in that second year, hadn't they? So they're going to bound to have an effect on your rugby, aren't they?
Yeah, we were just drunk and broke all year. Pretty much drunk, hungover, broke, drunk, hungover, broke. Did discover beers called Orange Moon Blacks. Don't know if anyone's had them, but they, 4 of those cost you £4.80, and they'll do you for a whole night. So there you go. One to pass on to your boys, maybe.
then 3 years of rugby at university, but made great mates, loads of socials, and rugby was pretty good. So. And if you had to have any sort of abiding memories of university rugby, what would they be, do you think?
The socials as much as the games, to be honest. The games, yeah. We had some really good games. We had a really good rivalry with Brunel down the road. We had a few big games against those. Because we were in a bit of a funny league, you didn't know who you were going to play. So we went to play St Mary's once. It was sort of a bit of a crunch game, and they decided to play their like Prem Rugby League players at open side number 8, 12, 13 of fullback. And they just broke us for a game. So the rugby was up and down, but we had a really good time. Yeah. Yeah, it was really good. We had a really good time. Had a good time.
Yeah, that's good. But did you have tours at all when you were at university? Just trying to think, because obviously university students are pretty skint, but would you still have a tour?
We had 2 tours. First tour went to Eos in Greece, which was very good fun. We went during Swedish midsummer. No rugby was played, but we still had full kit, which we just wore out clubbing. No, that was great. Found myself on a dance platform once or twice. And then for me and Tom's tour that we organised at the end of our third year, we went to Novalja in Croatia, Pag Island, for the week before Hideout Festival, which is much cheaper than going during for a Hideout Festival. And we stayed with a guy called Big Daddy at Crazy Night Inn, he'll probably listen to this podcast. Hi, Big Daddy. It was a seriously memorable experience. And because of the way the Croatian flights were, it was a 7-day tour. So it was very strong. We had a few alcohol poisoning incidents, but no one was long-term injured.
Was there rugby played on these tours at all? You mentioned the first one didn't have any rugby. Did the second one have rugby? No, just basically the rugby boys away together on holiday.
We really would have liked to play, but we kept picking places without a rugby club within 500 miles. And so therefore we couldn't. But we still wore the kit. We had a great kit.
Oh, that's fit, yeah.
With all of our names across the arses, like how Ras and Metro do.
I see. So when you leave university, you obviously want to continue playing rugby. How do you decide on where to go? And obviously where you live will have maybe a big bearing on this, but how did you decide, what your next move was in rugby and to move from university back into, senior rugby?
We were actually playing while we were at uni for Old Priorians.
Ah, okay.
And Andrews was our coach there and his coach at OPs. And he played for London Welsh as well, back when you were in the champs. And he did Wales under 20s, I think. But, yeah, he was like, just come play. It's London 1. It's a good standard. It was London 1 North. We're now in London 1 South, aren't we? But, it was really good. Played against Colchester for him. Got absolutely spanked every time. I think we lost 87-0 once at Colchester in front of all my friends and family, which was rough. But it was good. It was good fun. We had North Walsham away, which is a tough away game. 3.5 hours each way. But yeah, me and Tom both played with a bunch of our friends from uni for OPs for maybe 2-3 seasons.
So there's a strong link between that university because of the coach, basically, yeah? So he brought lots of players into there, and it was obviously that's a higher level than Essex One would have been, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, three leagues higher.
Yeah.
Yeah, Essex One's the same as Hearts Middlesex One.
Yeah.
So, it was a big jump. And again, it was fast, but the scrummaging was there, but we still had the odd prop, didn't know what they were doing, which we could play around with for a bit. Yeah, no, it was great fun.
And you said you're there for 2 or 3 years, but you sort of got, did you get the tired of that? Or did you just, why, you left there to come to London Welsh? Why did you feel you wanted a change of environment from OPs to Welsh?
There was a link between the two clubs called Die Langdon.
Ah, right, okay.
And he in no way talked me into it. And if you ask him, he'll say, of course, I wouldn't do that. But Tom left out of the blue because obviously he is Welsh and he is vain and he wanted the glory. and so I was left sort of on my own. And I think I was in a physio room with Di and I was sort of just talking about the club. And he was like, just, see what you think. See, do you really want to stay? Or do you really want to do something else? Do you want to play? And I thought, and then that session, I think we might have had, it was meant to be the scrummaging session, which I was obviously looking forward to because there's very little daylight in a pre-season schedule for tired prop, but there was a scrummaging day. And we had three front row forwards turn up for it. So we couldn't actually do it. And I thought, I've got to go somewhere with a bit more training, a bit more scrummaging going on. So I followed him over. First session of London Welsh was a football session, which nearly scared me back off, but I got over it. The rest is history.
So Tom was already here then, and he didn't say, like, come with us, Sam. He just obviously left you to make your own decision.
Oh, no, Tom was fully blown. in my ear all day. Okay. I went and watched the preseason game against Staines, where I've forgotten his name. The guy broke his leg. It's terrible.
Ben Francis.
No. He was a
The ex-pro player. I can't remember his name. Sorry, either.
Watch that game, and met Kai. Came down, I think, training the next week, and stuck around. Yeah.
So you didn't make the squad for the first game of the season away at Watford, but do you remember who you played your first game against then at Old Deer Park?
Oh God, my first game was a pre-season game against Kilburn Cosmos,
right?
And that was pre-season, and then we weren't eligible in time for the game against Watford.
Yeah.
First game at Old Deer Park. God, I don't know. I've all my memories that season, a lot of them are away, you know.
That's fine. So who was the England international you played with in that team then?
Oh, Tom. Yeah. Tom May.
So he played in the game is against Staines at ODP.
Was it?
Yeah. And you scored a try, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I think I scored my first two games, maybe.
I don't have that much detail.
Gordon debut. Nice.
That's great, but I remember your debut for a different reason, because as per usual, I was hosting the pre-match lunch, but I sat on a table and there's about nine of your family and friends on the table with me. They'd booked a table for your first game and got a bus down from, I want to say, Colchester. But
That was Shane would have been on that table. That was half the Clacton Rugby Club.
Really? I think that's the only time I've seen like nine of your sort of friends and family at a game for the New Welsh, or maybe I hadn't sat with them again. But I just remember them all being on there. So why are you here? Oh, well, our mate Sam's making his debut for the club today. So and they're all down watching it and having a good time.
Bang, look at that. Happy days. Yeah, you'd notice if they came down to another game that we don't blend in very well.
But, you know, what did that feel like? Because that's quite telling, though. You've got nine people coming to watch you play and making a debut for London Welsh. So you must have felt that was quite a special event for you.
Oh, definitely. Like, you'd never expect the club to be what it is, you know, if you switch over to it while it's in, what were we in? Hearts Middlesex 2?
One, yeah.
Yeah, I just couldn't believe it, really. And obviously, my dad's a big rugby man, and he couldn't believe it either, really. Yeah, I couldn't believe that it still was London Welsh. You know, it's still very much the exact same club it was in the 70s. So he was over the moon to come down, and he brought everyone he knew.
You know, so he did that. So what were the highlights of that first season for you in Hearts and Middlesex 1?
Just really enjoying rugby. My main reason for playing is being useful, doing a good job. And I felt like I was quite useful that year. Just smashing scrums up was just a laugh, you know. And such a good team, such a good set of boys. We just all had a really good time all year, you know. And feeling appreciated by a club is what makes it all keep moving, doesn't it? So
it does, but
it's really good.
And did you feel that love? Because you very quickly became a fan's favourite, and maybe it's because you scored quite a few tries. Maybe it's because of the effort. Maybe it's because you just like the social afterwards, and you love the crack with the supporters. But you certainly became like a favourite to our supporters. And so, you know, why do you think that was, Sam?
I think Welsh supporter, you love 70s Welsh rugby, and you love Jouet and open play and beautiful tries, and they must be loving like watching Sean run them in on the ones pitch this season. But I think in that year I surprised them by showing that there's a lot of glamour in a scrum. And you can make a real show of it, and really just, you know, it is the anticipation of a scrum is just a magical thing. And there's a knock on, you know, there's a, the whistle goes and there's like 10 second delay as everyone gets together and it sort of goes quiet, and then annihilate scrum, it's a penalty and everyone erupts. It's brilliant. It's better than scoring tries, I think, smashing the scrum.
We definitely had a powerful scrum. You had Baldwin, you had Sam Kane and Birtles, you had Kai in there, Ben Cullen, you know, you, Mark Weir. Exactly. So it was some good characters in that. And yeah, definitely was a you know, highlight seeing us dominate up front, which is great. Mm. But is it at the end of that season? Did you win an award? Was that the, as a player of the season?
Player of the year.
Coach's player of the year or the player's player of the year?
Yeah, Kai's precious cherub, it was, I think. Kai's player of the year.
Kai's little brown noser.
Yeah, that's it, see? Give him a fiver every training session and he gives me the award at the end of the year. No, I was shocked to win it. Genuinely, I was completely taken aback at the quality of players that were there that year. We had Ty at number 8, for God's sake.
Like, oh, God, yeah. And Morgan Brown at 7, Alex Laybourne. It's like, you know, all these lads. So it's a great bunch. Yeah. Gar Morgan.
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah. Great people, definitely. You know,
to win an award like that.
Yeah, but when you came into the club, boys, but when you came into the club and as a new lad and it's a new squad, and was it quite easy to sort of, you know, get the buy-in into what Kai was doing, and then also the social side? Did you find that quite easy to slip into?
Yeah, no, it was great. Just picked it up. Me and Tom came as a bit of a double act, I think, Mr. and Mrs. Set Piece. And we just carried on from uni, carried on where we left off, really. But it was great. You know, the tour, Frankfurt was at the end of the next year, wasn't it? This year? No, yeah, the end of the second year.
Okay.
But settled in right easy. I remember one real highlight was my first Thursday night training session. We played like 20 minutes of rugby at the end, like full contact, proper rugby.
Yeah.
And it was live scrums. I don't know whether Kai wanted to just see what we had or something, but it was live scrums. I remember I was propping against Mark Weir, and obviously I knew he was the ones loose head, and he knew I was the new, I don't know, upstart coming in to be a tight head. And we just ripped each other to shreds. I literally ripped his shirt off in a scrum. Like, we went at it, hammer and tongs. And that was great fun. It was brilliant. Yeah, loved it.
And you talk about the socials, but didn't you have, like, every Thursday or once a month? So every Thursday, once a month, that makes sense? You know what I'm trying to say, don't you? I think you have eating, you went out and you got renowned team for some of your team building, and you were doing some eating challenges in certain establishments. Is that right?
Yeah, we'd try and line up a team meal somewhere that did an eating challenge. I think it started at Schoolhouse. They had this monster stack or something. And I knew I ate quite fast, just from people opposite me telling me I ate very fast, and Rory in particular telling me off very fast. But I didn't realise how fast I ate until we did that eating challenge. It was me, Baby Bear Tony and Ty all trying to do this thing and beat each other. It's like a foot and a half tall burger and a bunch of curly fries. And I was sort of staring straight ahead, just getting through this thing. And I was like, oh, you know, I'm enjoying it, but I don't know if I've won. And the room kind of got quite hushed, and then it just started erupting because I'd finished the whole thing in the same time it took Tone to eat like a third. And I didn't realize. And I loved it. It was great. And I just carried on. We did, we went to Meat Liquor, where you got to do a triple chili challenge. And if you do it in under 10 minutes, you get it free. And me, Andy Black and Kai did it. And I did it in 3:06, I think. And loved it, just chatting, looking around the room afterwards. And Kai finished his in like 9:50 or something, and then threw up on the way home. I got home and started eating raw cookie dough out of a bowl where I was making cookies from.
Oh, God.
It was great. I think it's pace. yeah, I'm a pace guy. And it works well. And there was another thing. Yeah, we went to a Bite Me Burger, did like 24 mini burgers. I think I beat Big Sam. And I got a jumper and a hat for that as well, which I still wear. No, really good. I think if I carried on doing it, I'd die. It's a good way to eat free food.
Yeah,
you
well,
get it
yeah,
free if you win.
You just all these talents coming out of the woodwork now. So you know, just brilliant to hear. Look, you That's then it, actually yeah. had the second season, and it's a bit more challenging for you the second season because you know, you had a few concussions which affected your availability. So you know, how do they? Without want to sound obvious, how do they come about? You know, and how did that affect your availability that season?
I'm trying to work out which way around they went. It's all a bit fuzzy, obviously. The worst one was Old Merchant Taylors away at their place. They're amazing, however many tens of hundreds of thousands of pounds of facility they've got. When was it? Yeah, there was a Tongan prop playing against us, who obviously wasn't a prop. He was a brilliant number eight or something. And he just hit 40 and decided to prop. We were smashing him up in the scrum. But obviously, a Tongan number eight is quite a dangerous operator out in the field.
Yeah.
And I took a green line, sort of a short line off nine, and just he tackled me through my eyes so hard. I've never known anything like it in my life. And I sort of went down and got up quickly enough that I don't think anyone saw. Well, I definitely played on for another phase. And then I went into a mall couple of phases after that and got the smallest knock on my head and just was out. Just right. out on my back, arms in the air, you know, the proper KO body position. But then I couldn't remember. I drove home all the way to Clacton afterwards and woke up the next morning, couldn't remember the game, couldn't remember Ooh. Getting to Clacton. It was really pokey. And that was my second concussion. And I got recurring symptoms. So I should have been out for 4 weeks. I got recurring symptoms. So I was out for 7 or 8 weeks. And then I got a third one, like maybe a few weeks after that, which took me out for the season. So yeah, it really did stunt that year. It was kind of scary. You know, you don't really get, until you have them, you don't really know what they're like, but they are. You think you know what's going on in your head, and that happens. You're like, I was doing really weird things. I was getting the buses to the wrong places and getting off and not knowing where I was. I couldn't smell or taste anything. I fried and ate a rotten egg without realizing. And then Ro came in and was like nearly sick when she walked through the door, and I didn't realize. So I couldn't smell or taste, and I didn't realize what was wrong.
Well, look, you know. As you say, you know, as a club though, we take that very seriously, and you know,
yeah.
and you know, quite rightly, when you're like that, you know, you shouldn't be anywhere near the rugby pitch, which is the right thing. But you still managed to play 13 games or 13 matches that season for us. So yeah, you're still available. So when you were available, you always played. You know what I mean? And then, and even in a truncated season, you played, you know, a number of games, you know, for us then. So you'd never really injured, were you? I think it may be availability because of work or something like that, but you still had played quite a few games in that third season that was truncated by COVID.
Yeah, I got... What happened? I had a bit of an injury. I forgot what it was. I basically started the season late, played up to Christmas, and then when you're in meet, you can't really do anything in December. You're just out of order. Like you could be driving to Yorkshire to pick up bodies of beef. You don't know what you're going to do. So I was basically couldn't play December, and then I played a bit of Jan, bit of Feb, and then I think I got really ill. Like before COVID, I got this, remember there was a little bug that went around before COVID. I got that proper flu, and I remember Kai rang me on a Thursday and was like. Shoves is Mike Griffiths is he said he's ill, he's not sure if he can play Saturday, and I said however ill he is, he's not this ill. And Kai was like, all right, I'll go back to him. Shoves dug his heels in on the Friday. Kai was like, look, you've just got to do it. So I've been in bed from Thursday right till Saturday morning, except right through Friday, peeled myself out of bed, and got to rugby, white as a sheet, played the game. I think I might have, I couldn't really do anything during the game, but I put a couple of tackles in one of our scrums. And then I think I went home in my kit. I was so desperate to get home. And that was the last, that was, we won it just. God knew it was against.
Datchworth, was it? Datchworth, the last game, was it 10-3? No, yeah. that was the season before, maybe that was, sorry. That was in Northwest 3.
It was really tight. It might have been Royston.
Or Letchworth, 10-3 against Letchworth.
That was it. That was it. Yeah. And I remember, like, with my last dying effort, I put this tackle in off the side of a mall that I could have gone over. And I thought, there we go. Done the job there. Get me home.
You've made 39 appearances for the club, right, since Project Reset. And that's got to be in the top five players in terms of appearances. Definitely one of the most popular members for our supporters. But what have you enjoyed the most about being part of this magnificent club?
I hate to use Shanks as hashtag, but the family, the London Welsh family, is just it's just great. You know, a rugby club's about knowing everyone, walking in and knowing everyone you see, and having something to say to everyone, and slaps on the back, and playing, and, you know, just all being part of it, and all knowing why you're there, what you're doing, knowing the value of each other, and knowing, you know, that you've all got each other's back. And, you know, that's not just the team and the squad and the coaches, that's everyone in the whole club. Like, it's like one big organism, really. Yeah. There was a line I was going to say when I got my player award, but they didn't give me the mic because I was too drunk. But I said it was going to be it might not be the land of my fathers, but it's the land of my brothers. And I think that's pretty much it, really. Like, even though I'm not Welsh, you know, once you're in, you're in.
Yeah, no, that's beautifully said. That is so poetic, Sam. Look,
that's another talent, isn't it?
But what does a playing future hold for you, do you think? Because, you know, will we see more of the Butcher ODP? You know, because there's lots of new lads there, and you're such a character that you just mentioned, you know, playing for Druids, how much you enjoyed that, and we appreciate work is currently challenging, but we'd love to see more of the Butcher ODP. When you're back,
I've got to make myself useful first. I've got to be able to run. I've got to be able to not break my ankles when I walk around. I want to start end of this season. I want to get ready for it, and I want to play a lot of rugby next year. I think, maybe Feb, March. Got to get through Christmas, get out of the Cotswolds. No, not Cotswolds. That was last job, shit. Somerset. Get out of Somerset a bit more, get to training and get running and get playing. Yeah, because, I miss it. And I still think I can do a job, so I've got to get in there and get it done, right?
Yes, 100%. Look, you miss it. We miss you at the club, Sam. So please stay in touch. You are, I don't know what your new meat-esque nickname should be. We may have to think for that when you next turn up in the first. But you've gone from the buying, butcher.
The buying and supply chain manager of Old Deer Park.
It doesn't really roll off the tongue, that, does it? So we might have to make it a bit shorter. But Sam, look, you're a top guy. Stay fit and healthy. Don't work too hard. Come back to the fold. And let's all see you in the bar soon, yeah? And on the pitch.
Can't wait.
Top man.
Good man. All right.
Cheers.